Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your computer stays locked on our website, kptz.org. The website's more than a way to listen to today's show. For example, you can find biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town. You can even sample some of the earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who was that guy carrying his dog up the hill on 12th Street the other afternoon? Was the dog a purebred something too fragile to climb the hill? Or was it a devoted doggy parent just carrying his elderly dog? I couldn't tell. What about that woman on the recumbent bike, all decked out, bright orange helmet, orange jacket, even flying an orange flag? That's a bicyclist with a healthy understanding that cars are generally much larger and more lethal than bikes. And then there was a guy at the post office wearing toe shoes. Personally, I think toe shoes are more of a beach look, but whatever, it's Port Townsend. Jefferson County is full of all sorts of interesting characters. This show, Our Town, tries to profile some of the singular personalities who live here. But the show's only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So consider it a synopsis. We tried to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick, what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Wes Ng, who moved to Port Townsend back in 1976 and has a rather philosophical take on the changes in the town over the past 4.5 decades. Welcome to the show, Wes.
Well, welcome to you, Marianne.
Well, let's start at the beginning. I already gave away the fact that you weren't born here. So where were you born?
I was born in Seattle in 1946.
And did you live there for years or did you move around?
Oh, we moved around quite a bit. I was only there the first 3-4 years of my life. And then we moved to Spokane for about 5 years, then down to Longview for about 6-7 years. Spent my high school years in Tacoma.
So I'm always curious about high school years because it's a very formative time for them. Mm. What were you like in high school? What do you think people thought of you?
I would say most people didn't have much of any thoughts because I was largely invisible.
I see.
I rarely participated in school activities. I had recently moved to Tacoma, so I didn't really know anybody. And so I had a tendency to stick to myself more than I was to engage with my social class, you might say.
I see. Well, did you do any athletics at all?
No athletics. Pretty much just stuck to my books, lived a pretty straight life. Really didn't step outside the lines at all until I went to college.
Well, so you obviously studied a fair amount because you went to college. Was it always predestined as far as you were concerned that you were going to go to college, or did you consider another path?
Well, I personally considered other paths, but they weren't really open to me because of the nature of my parents, who both went to college and certainly had high expectations of me going there also, even though I was ambivalent about it. It was during the mid-60s when the Vietnam War was cranking up, and so I did have a choice, college or the draft, and I did decide to choose college.
Okay, I can understand. That's a word. You go to college?
I went to college over at Washington State University in Pullman, just south of Spokane, about 75 miles.
Why did you pick that school?
Well, it was an in-state school, a public institution that my parents could afford, and we couldn't afford to go out of state.
Right.
But I personally chose Pullman because it was the furthest away from home without leaving the state.
But I think you told me the other day it fit your image of a college.
Yes. Unlike some of the big city universities, when I went and visited Pullman, it was your classic college out of central casting in Hollywood. It was a classic red brick dominated school on a hill above a small farming town, and it had all the look of a classic university town. And it had a certain appeal to me, maybe just simply because of movies that I've been influenced by, but it had a welcoming feel to it that I just simply decided this is where I wanted to be.
Good. And what did you decide to study?
I started going there with the idea of studying sciences. I had a particular interest in chemistry, but when I came to realize how much effort was going to be involved with that, I just started looking at other possibilities. I looked into social sciences for a while, and I looked into the humanities for a while, and came to the simple conclusion that no one of them had a specific appeal to me, so I started working on a degree towards general studies, more specifically general humanities, where I was more freely available to take as many different kinds of classes that I chose to.
Okay. And did you go straight through, or did you have any breaks in your university career?
I actually had several breaks. It took about 7-8 years to get my 4-year degree. The biggest break was after my sophomore year. I decided to take a break from college, but because the Vietnam War was still going on, I did not want to get sucked up into the draft, so I discovered I had an option in going to a program like Peace Corps or VISTA, which was a domestic version of the Peace Corps. And so I did decide to join VISTA, and they sent me up to Alaska to live for a year with the Eskimos. So I spent a year up there as a community developer, reassessing my whole life and that of the Eskimos at the same time.
Can you describe what living conditions were like for you up there?
Rustic, to say the least. We were living in a log cabin along with a partner that I had at the time, a fellow VISTA volunteer. We were living without any telephone, water, power. Transportation was either by a small boat on the river or in the winter time, which is most of the time, by dog sled. It was quite an interesting year, experiencing all the hardships of people who lived north of the Arctic Circle. It was quite an eye-opening for someone as young as I was, which was about 20 at the time. It certainly gave me a different perspective on life, having always lived at home or been in school and college.
Yeah, so you sort of lived a typical middle-class existence, and all of a sudden there you are. How many people were in this village?
There was approximately 150 people in the village. It fluctuated quite a bit because the older kids left the village to go to school elsewhere. The younger kids were schooled in a small elementary school in the village, a two-room schoolhouse. But when the summers came, not only did the kids return, but the sunlight returned also. We had 24-hour sunlight. What happens in a village like that is the adults carry on in a regular, normal lifestyle. The high school kids sleep during the day and stay up all night when the adults are asleep. And they just take over the village and enjoy themselves from midnight to 4 or 5 in the morning.
Nice. Very odd, but nice. I can see that. So what did you actually do to help the villagers? That was your mission, to help them. What did you do?
Right. Well, it was such a new program that they didn't have any specifics lined up for us. They really simply suggested that we go into the village, spend at least 3 to 6 months just simply getting to know the village, get familiar with both the individuals and the problems that that specific village were dealing with at the time. So when we arrived, we took a look at the situation, got to know the village elders, and found out that there were a number of things that could be improved upon. One of them was a community hall building that needed to be rebuilt after a tragic fire the year before. Another item was starting up a village garden project and starting up a village library. In addition to all these kind of what seemed like larger projects, there was always a lot of individual one-on-one help with people with their government forms, tax forms, things of this sort. They're always having to deal with social services and whatnot in Fairbanks and Anchorage and so forth. We would just simply help them get through some of these government forms that they had to deal with in order to get various benefits they were entitled to.
The red tape. Red tape.
Lots of
everywhere.
Red tape.
Wow.
It was then and it still is today.
Looking back now, is there any one thing that stands out in your mind that you think you guys really helped with?
You know, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not sure I did. Virtually all the volunteers would say this. They learned a lot more from the Eskimos than the Eskimos ever learned from us.
It's probably true. Probably true. When your year was up, what did you do? What was your thinking?
Well, after a year away from college, I did have something of a yearning to get back to it. Of course, the war was still going on, so I didn't have a whole lot of choices unless I wanted to allow myself to be inducted into the draft. So I did decide to go back to Pullman and pursue my various interests without any specific regard to a future profession. I mostly just wanted to take classes that interested me and kind of let the chips fall where they may.
But it was the 60s. What things had changed by the time you got back, right?
Considerably. We had gone from a pretty 1950s kind of a society and lifestyle in Pullman, which is something of a backwater. But it did get caught up in the alternative lifestyles that were going on at the time. Of course, it affected me, and I got caught up in those alternative lifestyles also. Since I had also just come back from an alternative lifestyle living in Alaska, the two experiences together, I would say, set me off on a different path in my future after that. I realized that I could be pretty much self-independent and self-sufficient by picking up a few skills and just simply guiding myself through life instead of handing it over to a corporation or a large company or a bureaucracy of some sort or another.
Well, many young people think the same thing, whether it's the 60s or whatever year it is. They have that sort of, oh, I'm not going to work for the man. I'm going to do other things. Mm-hmm. But you actually stuck to it pretty well.
I did.
How did you do that?
I would say the most important or salient factors was, to this day, I simply never got married and had kids. So consequently, my lifestyle has been a lot less expensive than families who do follow that path.
That's true.
As a result of that, it enabled me to be much more choosy, let's say, in the jobs that I did take. They usually had fewer responsibilities and less pay. But at the same time, it gave me more freedom to live the lifestyle that I wanted to.
You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest is Wes Eng, who was telling me about his experience in Alaska as a community developer for the VISTA program. Then he returned back to college, and guess what? Things had really changed. The hippie movement was in full flush, if you want to call it that, and he, like a lot of people, made some major decisions, but he seems to have stuck to it. But you know, Wes, you do have to basically make enough money to eat and live somewhere. You went ahead and graduated, right?
I did.
And so what did you do to pay those bills, even if they were low bills, right?
Well, fortunately, back in the 60s, as you may recall yourself, going to college back then was a much more affordable proposition than it is today.
True.
So between the work I did in school and the help I got from my parents, I ended up graduating from college with zero debt.
That's great.
It is. As a result of that, I decided to stay in Pullman. I really liked it there. It was a small town, a highly educated town, of course, and there was plenty of work to do, both on campus or out in the farm fields, which drew me out there more and more all the time because I was fascinated by the beauty of what is known as the Palouse Country, which is the rolling wheat fields that surround Pullman. Through a friend, I got a job driving a wheat truck out there in those farmlands. One job led to another, and I ended up spending about 8 years out in the farm country doing various jobs, plowing and driving trucks and working on machinery and
whatnot. Was that year-round, or was it sporadic?
It was seasonal. Spring plowing, summer harvest, fall plowing. And then I had the winters off, where I decided to capitalize on one of the few practical things I learned in college, which was how to do pottery. And then when the alternative craft movement took flight back in the mid-70s, I realized that I could be part of that also. So I started making pottery part-time to supplement my income from farm work.
Where did you sell the pottery?
In Pullman, I sold it in front of the student bookstore, where there was a small group of other alternative types that managed to put together what they called a craft guild, and got themselves insured and got permission to sell in front of the Student Book Corporation. That went on for 4 or 5 years.
Did you do any traveling?
I did. I took a couple trips to Europe to visit some old friends who I knew in college. I hitchhiked around the country between here in New York and here in San Diego. Hitchhiked back and forth across the state quite a bit to see my folks in Tacoma. And I did a lot of hiking, both here in the Northwest and over in Hawaii. Notably, the Nepali coastline is a famous hike amongst hikers who enjoy that sort of thing. So that was one of the things I pursued when I wasn't working, that and just general improvement in my education. One of the reasons I stayed in Pullman was that I was thoroughly enamored by a big university research library. Because I enjoyed doing independent research on my own as sort of an extension of my interest in general studies.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you discover Port Townsend?
That was just a combination of luck and desire. The desire was, after 12 years, I wanted to leave Pullman and look for another small town that didn't have a university into it, just to experience another side of life. A friend of mine had moved to Port Townsend. So on one of my hiking trips over to the coast, which I usually did each year from Pullman to get in touch with saltwater, on my way to the coast, I decided to swing through Port Townsend in the summer of 75 to just pay a visit and take a look around. It only took about 24 hours after visiting my friend here that I realized this was an exciting, interesting, little, quaint community here, and that it was worthy of further consideration of moving here. 6 months later, I did. In the winter of 76, I packed my bag and moved to Port Townsend, all because of a friend of mine who had moved here and I came to visit.
Hmm. Were you ever tempted, seriously tempted, to take a different path in terms of, you know, the white picket fence, the family life, that kind of thing? Were there points where that did appeal to you?
Not really. For reasons I'm sure nobody can really explain about their own personal lives, how they ended up either married or not married, and whether they had kids or no kids. I can't really say how I ended up choosing the path I did. Sometimes I get the feeling it chose me more than I chose it.
Could be. Well, when you moved here in the 70s, things were not nearly as expensive as they are now, but still, you didn't win the lottery or something. You still had to support yourself. So what did you do when you first came to Port Townsend?
Oh, that was easy. I kept going back to Pullman to earn money.
I see.
Because I still hung on to my farm job for another three years or so. So when I was over here, not farming, I was making pottery. And then I'd just take my pottery with me and set up in front of the student bookstore and keep selling pottery while the school session was in. So that was always in the spring and the fall, and then during Christmas time also. It was a combination of all of that. And then in 1980, I had an opportunity to take over a small storefront in downtown Port Townsend and opened up a magazine shop. Hmm. That was until 1984. The movie Officer and a Gentleman was being filmed in downtown Port Townsend. And I had an opportunity to meet many of the people, cast and directors and whatnot, because they all seemed to beat a path to my magazine shop to buy magazines, chocolate, and tobacco. Three popular items while you're waiting around to do your job.
I would think so. Anything stand out about that period of time?
The thing that stands out is just how much the town got excited by it all. They needed to recruit extra craft members for the movie, and it seemed like most everybody turned out for auditions. And everybody, of course, loved to come downtown and stand around the trucks and watch the action take place. There was just a general feeling of, how did we in Port Townsend ever get on the map to be in a Hollywood movie, sort of, you know? It's like, there it was.
I one time went to a showing of An Officer and a Gentleman at the Rose Theater, And people kept jumping up and saying, that's me in the background there. There I am. They were very excited about being extras in the movie.
The other thing that's so surprising about it is, unlike so many movies, you never hear about them again. But for some reason, Officer and a Gentleman is a movie that most everybody knows. It's one of those movies that somehow has survived in the memories of most people. And
well, certainly most people around here.
But it does.
Okay, so you had the magazine stand for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And what flowed from that?
Well, what flowed from that was really a series of various odd jobs that I had for the next 10 years or so. Actually, about 15 years, because it was around the year 2000 that I met a good friend of mine who was a landscaper. And this lady, who got to be a good friend of mine, talked me into helping her out with spring work. And not knowing anything about gardening, she had to point out to me what the difference was between a weed and a plant. Can be kind of subtle sometimes. When she accomplished that, I kind of got into it more enthusiastically than I thought I would. It became another area of inquiry. What is gardening all about? What's plants all about? What is horticulture all about? Peppered her with endless questions, acquired more and more knowledge. 3 years later, she retired. I took over the business, and I've been doing it ever since. This has been going on almost 20 years now.
But it's something you really like.
It is something I really like. It started off as a job, and then it sort of became something of an interest, and now it's kind of evolved into a passion. And I might add, in particular, with roses. One of my clients has 50 roses. I was forced to learn how to take care of them, and now I passionately take care of them. I love roses, and I try and do what I can to spread the joy of roses wherever I go.
Well, certainly gardening and landscaping is an interesting business, and some people make it into a pretty lucrative business. Have you been tempted to go further in it and have multiple shops and big gardening enterprise?
No, not at all. One of the horrors in my life is the thought of hiring someone to work for me.
I see. Management is not your thing.
Management is not my thing. I really much more enjoy just working by myself. It's just a lot simpler. That is quite a characteristic word to my whole life, is keeping things simple. I have a pretty simple life with a pretty simple job, pretty simple obligations. I just like to keep it good and simple. There's a piece of, I guess it's a cliche that simply went, of this world, I need very little. And of that little, I need very little.
Interesting. Well, seeing as you've now been in Port Townsend for decades, how do you characterize the changes? What do you see now versus what you saw when you first arrived?
Well, it has been 44 years. When I did arrive in the winter of 76, the ferry didn't run in the wintertime. And consequently, there was only half as many locals as there are now, and there was no tourists in the wintertime, that is. It was mostly just a summer phenomenon. And over the years, we have simply seen a number of things, including a year-round ferry, which has also led to year-round tourism.
Right.
And that's probably the biggest change. The fact that the town doubled in size from 5,000 to 10,000, I feel has had really minimal impact compared to the tourism, which I also don't mind exactly. I'd rather have tourism than big smokestack industry. But I would say that's the biggest change we've seen around here, is the increased popularity as a tourist location, destination.
Well, certainly prices have increased, particularly in living accommodations. Did you end up purchasing a house at any point, or an apartment, or you rent? What do you do?
Well, due to my low-key lifestyle, I've always lived in very, one might say, non-standard, non-orthodox living arrangements, including the one I'm in now, which I recently made a transition from a small cottage here in town to a Airstream trailer about 5 miles out of town. And I was able to pick up an older one for a reasonable price and have done a complete 100% remodel to it to make it all new again. And it's a very comfortable, simple little space of 150 square feet that I live in.
Well, some of those Airstreams are pretty nice.
They certainly are.
Okay. Now, we're getting towards the end of the show, but I just want to pick up briefly on something you said earlier, which is really predetermination and free will. What do you think? That's a huge subject, but a few thoughts.
Right. Of course, everyone has a lot of ideas or thoughts about that concept of free will versus determinism. It really comes down to, did you freely choose to be where you are and who you are? Or were these choices made for you by a whole let's say, a ray or a constellation of external forces working on you. Everything from your DNA, your parents, your peer group, country you live in, the culture you swim in. And I would contend that most of these things largely go to influence who you end up being. Not completely. I'm not 100% controlled by these external forces, but I do largely believe that the major events in my life and the major directions it has taken over all these years has largely been due to a combination of circumstances that weren't really entirely under my control at all.
A phrase you used the other day stuck with me. You said that in your life, a lot of times you were choosing by virtue of not choosing.
That's right.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, the not choosing was simply that there were many things, and I think many people could say this, there are many things in life they know they don't want. It's harder to answer the question, what do you want? And so by simply eliminating a number of major things that I don't want or that I didn't want, it left me with just a few options that I would end up, you know, becoming one thing or another. Some of the things I did not want, as I sort of indicated earlier, was a family lifestyle, a corporate job, or a professional job involving lots of responsibilities and other people working for you. I simply decided that these things were just too stressful for me, and I wanted to live a low-stress lifestyle. And so within that context, that perspective on life is chosen, so to speak, many of the avenues that I've ventured down. So I allowed that to control my life more than other things that people are controlled by in their lives.
So you've essentially been pretty much of a free spirit, if you want to look at it that way.
One version of it, at
least.
One
version, okay. Well, believe it or not, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show, Wes. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Mary Ann McNellis. My guest today has been Wes Ng. In addition to thanking Wes for sharing his thoughts, I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson, the man in the glass booth. He's the editor and producer of Our Town. He makes me and my guests sound much nicer and more eloquent than we really are. He'll smooth it out. He'll take out our mumbles and jumbles. I also want to thank three key people around here: Larry Stein, Program Director, Kate Ingram, Station Manager, and Robert Ambrose, Chairman of the Board. They work very hard to make your community station ever better. And listener, I want to thank you. We need your support. Everything done at KPTZ is done by volunteers. We need more volunteers. Our regular listeners know we're in the midst of renovating a building at Fort Worden, which will become our new headquarters. Of course, we will all miss our current world headquarters in a trailer in the parking lot at Mountain View School, but we're looking forward to having new headquarters with soundproof booths. Can you imagine? Construction's underway right now. The building right behind TAPS at Fort Worden. They say we're moving in September. We shall see. You know how it is with construction. But we do need donations to help with the reconstruction. So, listener, I'm signing off for today. Please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Mary Ann McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.